ਤੁਸੀਂ ਹੋ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ।
You with SBS Radio.
With nearly 1 billion people eligible to vote, Indian elections are not just the voice of the most populous, the biggest democracy, but also one of the fastest growing economies of the world. With so much at stake, we at SBS are trying to decode the Indian elections 2024 for you. I am Shaina Kalra and joining me is Aaron Fernandez, a journalist from SBS who is currently at the heart of it all, India. Hi Aaron, thanks for joining us. Firstly, we would like to understand from you, why do Indian elections matter to the world? And what do you think will be the impact of these elections on the India-Australia relationship?
I think this is a very consequential election for the world. I mean, over the last 10 years, we've seen India rise in stature as a strategic power and as an economy. And while Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister, and the BJP take credit for steering that, as they should and as you'd expect, there's also the fact that India, during that time, has become the most populous nation. It's coincided with the rise of China at a time when Western countries are seeking to diversify the places they import goods from. So they're really wanting to engage with India more to counterbalance the economic and military weight of China. So the timing for India to, you know, shake off the shackles of its colonial past and really rise as a global power is here and now. I've been struck by that many times visiting India over the last few years. There is a huge sense of momentum in the country that India's time has come. And I think when you look at the way particularly Western nations are trying to embrace India, I think that really supports that feeling locally. I think in terms of which party or parties wins the election, and we find out the results next week, I think governments like Australia, for example, they would say that the India-Australia relationship exists regardless of who is in power in both countries, and which is what you would expect, you know, governments like Australia to say. I mean, India will, for the reasons I mentioned before, India will always be an important export and import market for Australia. We know the diaspora community, the Indian diaspora community in Australia is so important. And, you know, the strategic aspects to the relationship as well, India and Australia both being members of the Quad dialogue. So I think regardless of who wins the election, you would expect statements from the Australian government, for example, saying that the relationship is bigger than any one particular party or leader.
Indian elections are structured in a way that people do not vote for the Prime Minister or President directly. But there has been a huge liking for the current Prime Minister, Mr. Narendra Modi, in the past elections. And the Indian media has called this phenomena the Modi wave. In your experience, how much of the Modi wave is still existent in the current elections?
I think that's one of the key things that we're really looking forward to seeing when the results are announced on Tuesday, because, of course, all the polling leading into this election has predicted a huge win for Narendra Modi and the BJP. And of course, Modi sets the target of securing a massive parliamentary majority of 400 seats for the NDA. So the BJP really started this election as the favourite to secure a third term in government. But it's been really interesting for me being in India for the last couple of weeks and speaking to people on the ground. You do hear a lot of disquiet and frustration from ordinary Indians with the way especially the economy is going. People are really concerned about jobs, they're concerned about inflation, and a lot of people are not really happy with the way those things are going in the country at the moment. And so that's a really interesting split, because of course the Modi government wants to promote how much the national economy has grown, particularly during his last term when India overtook the UK to become the fifth largest economy in the world. So Modi and the BJP are trying to sell that message of strong economic growth, but it doesn't necessarily mean much for the average man on the street, the average man or woman running their own businesses and trying to support their families. So I think in terms of there being this Modi wave, it's going to be really interesting to see if the BJP wins the election, if they secure the massive 400 target that the Prime Minister set, or if they come close, or even if they actually lose the majority, if they receive less seats, fewer seats than they won in 2019. That's all going to be really interesting to see, because that's going to reveal what level of support or frustration the majority of Indians have with this government.
The biggest criticism of the current government has been of favouring a particular religion. How much of a role is religion playing in Indian elections? Since India is the largest democracy, how democratic and transparent are these elections?
Well, there are widespread concerns here in India, especially among civil society groups, about the use of hate speech and the suppression of minority voters or intimidation tactics around voting booths. So civil society groups and India's opposition have accused the Prime Minister of engaging in hate speech during the election. Narendra Modi gave a speech in Rajasthan in April where he seemed to refer to Muslims as infiltrators, and the BJP has published several fairly disparaging cartoons on their official social media channels during the election, which suggests that if the opposition Congress-led alliance came into power, it would take the wealth of other Indians and redistribute it among Muslims. So those instances all resulted in complaints to India's Election Commission. I know in the cases of those cartoon videos, the BJP was ordered to take them down. And as far as Narendra Modi's speech was concerned, he later denied that he was referring to Muslims at all in that speech. But it was pretty clear to most of the civil society groups and people in India watching who he was referring to. So it has been it's not been a good election period for harmony between the communities in India. But it is also, from my experience being here for the last few weeks and speaking to people on the ground, it is interesting to note how really aware many Indians are about the risk of communal tension. Most people don't want to see violence between Hindus and Muslims. I'm in Varanasi right now. I've spent the last couple of days filming with the Muslim community here, and people describe Hindus and Muslims as like the threads of cloth that are woven together to make the saris. You know, they're intermeshed together and they can't live without each other. So people really resent this kind of stoking of tensions between the two communities. So, you know, whether this kind of most analysts seem to agree that the BJP has engaged in this type of material because its campaign was floundering after the first two phases of elections, so it was trying to stir up its base to get out and vote. But I do wonder if there's perhaps a limit to how much that kind of politicking can achieve, and whether many Indian voters are actually seeing through it at this stage. And then there are, as you say, concerns around the conduct of the election and really the independence of the Election Commission. So speaking to civil society groups here, they all point to the changes to the way the election commissioners are appointed. It's now done by a panel, or since a legal change during the last term brought in by the BJP, the panel that appoints the commissioners on the Election Commission is now, those are now appointed primarily by the Prime Minister and another member of the government. So they're basically saying that that has created an environment where the Election Commission is sort of lacking objectivity and independence, and perhaps not following through on complaints about election manipulation in the way that it should.
And what about the opposition? How strong is opposition in India? We have seen a relatively new party, Aam Aadmi Party or AAP, in Delhi and Punjab, and a new alliance called India cropping up during these elections.
Well, this is a first for the opposition parties to come together and form an alliance to take on the BJP. And we saw in the lead up to the election, after that alliance was announced, that there was a lot of bickering and infighting. And in fact, the opposition alliance couldn't agree or didn't agree on who would be its prime minister, its candidate for prime minister, if the alliance did win the election. And most of the analysts that I spoke to felt that that would be to the detriment of the India alliance, that even though, as you say, the prime minister is not chosen by voters, it's chosen by the party that wins the greatest number of seats. Indian elections have taken on a presidential style, particularly under Narendra Modi, who is such a popular personality. So not having someone that they could put up to say, this is who you'll be getting for prime minister if you vote for us, a lot of analysts seem to agree that that put the opposition alliance in a weakened position. And you do wonder if this is almost a trial period, that maybe if they aren't successful in securing a parliamentary majority at this election, then maybe if it's tried again in a second election, that maybe it will be more successful then after having the experience this time around.
India has seen a decline in Freedom of Press Index. In your experience, how is it working as a journalist in India?
Well, speaking to Indian journalists, I've met so many people, so many journalists in India who say, you know, really their careers and their lives have been turned upside down in the last 5 to 10 years with, they've basically left the industry because there isn't much of an industry left. Now, that is a very politicized environment, a very polarized environment here in India politically, especially concerning the media. So if you were to ask a pro-BJP person, then they will tell you that the media is fine. But really, when you speak to the majority of journalists about the pressure that they face in trying to do their job, in trying to approach anything even remotely resembling criticism of the government, there's many of them that will say they're no longer in the industry anymore because it just became too difficult. From my experience, I've been trying to arrange an interview with a spokesperson from the BJP since I've been here, and I actually had one lined up. But then in the morning of the interview, I messaged the spokesperson and said, look, in addition to the questions that I would like to ask you about India's democracy and the election, I would like to ask you about the recent spying allegations that we had in Australia, the story of Indian undeclared spies from India being discovered and being kicked out of Australia. I said, look, I would like to get a statement from the party on that, and merely suggesting that I was going to ask that question resulted in the interview being cancelled. So I wasn't able to interview the BJP at all after sending that message, just to let them know that, hey, I would like to ask this question as well, so please be prepared for it. The interview was cancelled in less than half an hour. So that, you know, probably indicates what the culture around the media and the government answering difficult questions is like in India at the moment.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you so much for your time. We were talking to Aaron Fernandez, who is covering Indian elections 2024 directly from India. I am Shaina Kalra, and you're listening to SBS.
ਫੇਸਬੁੱਕ ਉਤੇ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਨੂੰ ਲਾਈਕ ਕਰੋ, ਸਾਂਝਾ ਕਰੋ ਅਤੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਵਿਚਾਰ ਵੀ ਪ੍ਰਗਟਾਓ। ਫੇਸਬੁੱਕ ਉਤੇ SBS ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਨੂੰ ਲਾਈਕ ਕਰੋ, ਸਾਂਝਾ ਕਰੋ ਅਤੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਵਿਚਾਰ ਵੀ ਪ੍ਰਗਟਾਓ।